Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it! Young Ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, and with me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. It's nice to have the Twitch back up. So if you are joining us via the live stream, feel free to pop in some questions. We're talking draft with Sam Vecenie, and we're really excited to have me show my ass some more about shit I don't know about.
Sam, Carter is woefully unprepared to talk about the draft and is now becoming a recurring bit. This is a weird draft.
It indicates I actually do know what I'm talking about. I don't.
Yeah. Well, playing off it at least has become a bit of a bit for us. But we are very excited to have Sam Vecenie from The Athletic on the podcast. Sam, how are you doing today?
Can we talk about the incredible head movement that you have going, like the incredible radio host head movement every time that you say something? It's absolutely incredible, Justin. I am I'm happy to be here. If only to be in the presence of that, I am happy to be here.
I'm very animated. I do it even at work. Like when I'm on the phone calls, taking calls, talking to customers and whatever, I'm going to be flailing around. I'm very expressive. It probably isn't the best, and maybe I go a little too far away from the mic, but we're super excited to have you on. Can you speak towards just how weird this draft has been? Because this was a weird draft before the virus hit, and yeah. I want to get some perspective on exactly how difficult it's been for you to cover this thing.
It's super fucking weird. It's a draft cycle that was going to be complicated to evaluate before all of the coronavirus pandemic situation and everyone having to go into some level of quarantine happened. And now that that has occurred, it's thrown everything for a loop, because I think that, like, I've been writing this for the last, you know, month and a half or however long we've been in quarantine. All the days blend together now, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people don't really realize the logistics of how NBA front offices tend to evaluate the draft and the timing behind a lot of things. They try to do a lot of their work early, and they try to do a lot of their work later. And the reason for that, especially high-level executives, I mean, whenever I'm talking about this, there are certainly scouts that are out season-wide. But in terms of high-level executives, a lot of the time, from, let's say, mid-December through mid-February, they're stuck in the offices really trying to hammer out trade deadline stuff or roster management stuff or injury replacements, things like that. They don't really get a chance to travel as much as area scouts do until the trade deadline passes. So really, conference tournament season tends to be the first time where you start to get massive amounts of high-level executives going out evaluating prospects at an extremely high level. So the fact that we didn't really get high major conference tournament season, the fact that we didn't get an NCAA tournament season, it's going to create a situation where a lot of high-level executives haven't seen a ton of these kids live since events like McDonald's All-American, since Hoop Summit. So it's going to be about a year difference. And I think that that's going to create a situation where it could end up being a bit more of an unpredictable draft than what we've seen in recent years, if only because of the logistical issues that occurred right when everything shut down.
Right. And another thing that I've noticed when I look at multiple mock drafts and big boards and all that kind of stuff is, in past years, there's kind of been a familiar rhythm to all of them. Like, let's say last year you have Zion, then you have RJ Barrett or Ja Morant, and there's some familiar rhythms to it, but there seems to be massive variations. And for everybody that doesn't have a subscription to The Athletic, it's free right now. Go check it out. And Sam does a good job of breaking down in there what your process is. But for our listeners, can you kind of talk about how you weigh things when it comes to putting together one of these big boards?
In regard to just like what my process is in terms of evaluation.
Yeah, like how much weight do you put on what you're hearing, personal opinion on ceiling? Like what's kind of the decision-making process and how do you weigh things when you put together one?
Yeah, so when I do mock drafts, it's basically all what I'm hearing from NBA teams and from agents and from coaches. And
us too.
College coaches, et cetera. Yeah. Like, I mean, you get a good feeling and like sometimes I will differ pretty substantially from what I'm hearing and I will try to, sometimes I will account for the fact that I think this person is just going to move up, right? Or he's going to move down as the process goes and get ahead of the curve. But for the most part, it's just based on what I'm hearing. When I do big boards, it's mostly my opinion. Okay. I do think that there's a lot of value in, I would say, the thoughts of experts within the field. And if I'm noticing that there is a distinct difference between the value that the NBA scouting and executive community places on a player, a very vast difference in comparison to where I am on a player, I will then really go back and I may like move that guy up a little bit, just thinking, all right, like I'm missing something here. How do I go about rectifying this? Like Tyler Bay is a good example of this in Colorado. I don't really get it with Tyler Bay. I don't think he's very skilled. I understand that he's like 6'6 with a 7-foot wingspan and has an incredible second jump, but he makes more mind-numbingly bad passing decisions than any player in this draft. And I thought that it was an egregious, terrible decision that he won the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year because he's just like a chronic overhelper and a guy that, you know, just tries to shoot passing lanes and go for weak side blocks, right? So I had that guy down at like 90 on my board. And then you talk to teams and they're like, oh, yeah, we're looking at him more like 25 to 40 range.
Oh, wow.
Right now, I would say, is what his, you know, somewhat narrowed, but, you know, a little bit broad draft ranges. We could say like maybe 25 to 45. So I bumped Tyler Bay up just because I understand that I'm not infallible. Like, look, I'm not, you know, fucking running the Golden State Warriors right now, right? So, like, you know, they're – teams,
know your audience, Sam.
Executives that I think are smart, and I tend to be like, okay, if I have a different opinion than them, I'm not going to say they're definitely right. I'm not going to say that I'm definitely right, but it's probably worth finding a middle ground in terms of what where I am on a player.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I'm kind of curious about with drafts like this is, you know, like oftentimes we really look forward to drafts that are stacked with really good prospects, and then I feel like those tend to go a little by the book because everyone just, you know, a good player falls to a guy, to a team, and they take him. Do you kind of anticipate some wildly varying boards? Like, I understand that everyone knows this draft is pretty underwhelming, right? But is there, have you gathered much consensus at all, even if it's lukewarm consensus, or is this going to be the Wild West?
I think that there's like some consensus, right? Like the guy that I hear most at the top is Anthony Edwards, right? Like, I don't know that I've talked to an NBA executive that has Anthony Edwards outside of the top five, right? I don't know that I've talked to one that has him. I've probably talked to a couple that have him outside of the top three, but I would say for the most part, he is as close as it gets to being like a top three guy in this class, right? James Wiseman, some evaluators just really don't want to draft bigs in the top five. They just don't think that it's worth it in a day and age where you can go out and get reasonable production from the big man market for $4 million a year on the free agency market. LaMelo Ball, I've heard guys that love him like I do, like I've been number one on my board. I've heard guys that just aren't interested in him and think he's like a borderline lottery guy. Okay. So there are guys that are kind of all over the board, and then there are guys that, you know, maybe have a bit more of a narrowed consensus. I think it really is just like a bit more of a player by player, person by person situation, where everyone in the scouting community tends to have things that they really value. Some really value analytics, some really value production, some really value tools, some people value feel for the game at a high level. Depending on who you're speaking to at the time and what their value system is, you're probably going to get a pretty real difference of opinion from each person.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of I've seen a wild range of opinions when it comes to Wiseman, and he's someone that you see a lot of people on draft Twitter that really kind of advocate for avoiding him high in the lottery. And you have him at three on your big board. And Evan Damerol in our Discord had asked what you kind of see as his upside and what type of player he projects as. Do you see him kind of in the DeAndre Ayton mold, or is this a guy that just because of the lack of tape that you have on him, that there's more questions on what he can be?
So, yeah, I think that, you know, the idea that, like, quote unquote, like draft Twitter is low on him is because they don't have a lot of experience with him.
Okay.
Right. Like, I saw James Wiseman play for the first time when he was like 16 years old. You know, I watched him over the course of the last year at McDonald's All-American, at Hoop Summit. I've seen James Wiseman live for probably 20 hours of my life plus. Mm-hmm. Easy. So, like, I can understand why people who haven't had that much experience with him are lower. Having said that, most NBA scouts, at least, that do travel to those events like I do, think of him more highly than some of the draft Twitter people.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is the tools and the athleticism. I used to be someone that was not high on James Wiseman at all when I saw him when he was younger. I was like, oh yeah, this guy in a normal draft is going to be like a borderline lottery pick. He is 6 or 7 foot 1 with like a 7 foot 6 wingspan, and doesn't really know how to use his lower half yet. Doesn't know how to, you know, get his center of gravity a little bit lower so that he can load up and like actually hold his ground whenever someone barrels into him trying to finish at the basket. He took a pretty big leap in that regard, though, over the course of his senior year in high school. Really, I noticed the difference like maybe around January of his senior year in high school. And then whenever he went to McDonald's All-American practices, whenever he went to Nike Hoop Summit practices, he was really good defensively. This guy was shutting down everything at the rim. And given his tools and given some of the flashes we saw at Memphis this year, I feel pretty good that he's going to be a starting caliber center at the next level. Now, the question is it worth selecting a starting caliber center at number 4 overall, or what kind of upside does he need? Does he need to have the upside of a top 3 center in the NBA? In this draft, I don't think he needs to have that. In a normal draft, with normal levels of players, I would think that.
Mm-hmm.
But like the guy I've been comparing him to is like, I think he has a chance to be something similar to what we've seen from Miles Turner, basically, in Indiana. Miles Turner finished top 5 in defensive player of the year last year. He is a guy that can knock down trailer threes. He's a guy that can roll to the basket reasonably well. I actually think Wiseman is much better as a roller toward the rim, due to greater catch radius and due to the fact that he's just a little bit more functional athletically. But a guy that you're probably going to want to play in drop coverage and not have him switch all over the court defensively. The good news for Wiseman is that more teams are moving toward that model. So is it worth taking someone like Miles Turner at number 3 in this draft? If I got Miles Turner, I'd probably be pretty happy in this draft, to be honest. I think that it's not a good draft. So if that's who I'm thinking he's going to be something approximating, even if Miles Turner might make like one or two All-Star games in his career, I'm pretty good with that personally.
So I'm really interested by the way you're talking about him right now, because I feel like as someone who isn't as informed as he should be on this draft, it feels like the kind of discussion with him is all upside and not in kind of a low floor. And it seems like you feel like he has a pretty high floor. Do you feel like that's the case? Do you feel like he actually is more of a high floor, low ceiling guy? Because that seems to run contrary to the narrative about him compared to, you know, a guy like Okongwu.
So, I mean, it depends on what you mean by floor. Like, I don't think that James Wiseman has – I think James Wiseman has very little chance of being, like, totally out of the NBA. Now, the problem is that, like, the floor for bigs at the top end of the draft gets steeper quicker, mm-hmm. right? Like, if he is – nobody wants to pay centers $12 million anymore or $14 million anymore. You either want to have – a max level center because he's really, really good, or like someone over, you know, $20 to $25 million a year, or you want to pay guys the minimum because they're able to give approximate values of production while just like playing a role within a defense and within an offense. So I do understand why people would say that the floor is lower, if only because from a value standpoint, in terms of the marginal add that a player brings to the table in comparison to others at his position, I think the floor in comparison to someone like a man, it's hard in this draft because they all have like pretty low floors, to be honest. Like,
this but, is fun.
This yeah, sucks, man.
But like, I don't see a world where James Wiseman is like out of the NBA in 4 years. Like, I see a world.
I guess my question is he the like kind of guy who stays in the NBA for 12 years, but at no point are we sure he's any good? Because there are guys.
I think that floor absolutely exists for him. Yeah. He's a guy that there have been effort questions that have come up with him. There have been mentality questions that have come up with him. I thought he got better at that stuff as he got through high school. And I think I'm a little bit less questionable on those things than some are. He's also an incredibly intelligent human being. He had... what did I get told? I think he had like a 3.8 GPA in his first semester at Memphis. Like, wow. Really, really good kid, really sharp kid. You talk to him, you just like kind of immediately recognize that he's very smart. So like those guys that have that kind of intellectual capacity, like it's hard for me to see them failing out, especially whenever they understand that like basketball is their livelihood and they're going to put a lot into it. So I think the floor might be a little bit higher than what some people say, but within the context of positional valuations across the NBA, is it a problem if James Wiseman becomes like Robin Lopez and gets picked third overall? I mean, yeah, probably that's a real problem. That's not going to be worth number three, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of these players, people would feel happier about them if they weren't being drafted as high as they are, but they're mm-hmm. likely going to stick in the NBA. Sam, is it fair? You've given such a nice detailed breakdown on Wiseman. Now I'm just going to simplify everything. Is it fair to say if you're a Cavs fan and you haven't enjoyed the Andre Drummond experience, you probably don't want Wiseman?
I think he's a better defender than Andre has shown.
Okay.
I think he is a better screen setter. I mean, like maybe not right now, but like in the future, I think he'll be like a better defender and screen setter than what Andre has shown. I'm a little bit worried that he's going to try and overextend himself and try to be like a mid-range shot creator or like a high post shot creator when I don't really see that in his repertoire in going to a situation like the Cavs where, let's just be frank, the ball hasn't exactly zipped around the court in recent years.
I think that's fair.
That he could be called upon to do that stuff a little bit more. That worries me in that situation.
It almost feeds into those worst habits that he has, right? And those tendencies.
Right. So I would hope that they really simplify the role if he was to go to Cleveland. But if they were to take him and be like, Andre is going to show you the ropes for a year and Tristan is going to go elsewhere and we're going to like execute a sign and trade for Tristan to bring something back for him because, you know, a contender wants him and doesn't have cap space, like, you know, something along those lines. Like, I think it'd be, I think they could do worse in this draft, I guess. I mean, so, like, there are worse players.
Now, you've called me crazy on this take before.
And yeah, I believe the quote was, he's fucking crazy, correct?
Sure.
I personally really like Okongwu in this draft because I do feel like he's somebody that understands.
I'm coming around for what it's worth.
I feel like he's somebody that understands what his role is. And I feel like the sentiment that you don't take a center high in the draft doesn't apply as much to someone that kind of has his defensive profile where he can defend multiple positions, he can get out in space, and especially a guy that projects to be a good rim protector while also being able to defend in space. I feel like that's very modern NBA, and I've been riding the Okongwu train as kind of that the guy that fits the Cavs best, and I don't feel like he's a tier below these other prospects at the top of the draft.
Yeah, I'm coming around on Okongwu. I think the big question you just have to ask about bigs in general is, can we close games with this guy on the floor? Mm-hmm. Like, just period. And the big thing is, can this guy guard in space? If he gets put on an island with Stephen Curry at the end of the game, can he show up? I don't think many people would have said that Kevin Love could have done that, but it happened, right?
Luckily, Steph was hunting a three. I'm very appreciative of that.
So I think that that's the ultimate question you have to ask these guys. Can they close? In Okongwu's case, there are skills that I look for that tend to be more translatable with someone closing. Can a center protect the rim, which I think he can? Can a center defend in space? I think he gets really good bend throughout his hips and is okay laterally. I don't think he's elite laterally, but okay. I think he's pretty good. Can he shoot, which I'm dubious of? I don't really think that you want him in any more of a situation than like being in the short corner or being the guy that rolls to the rim. And then can he make decisions at a high level? And I think it's a bit of a mixed bag there so far in terms of his passing ability. So in the vein that like the Clippers sometimes close with Montrezl Harrell, right? Like, I've kind of been calling Okongwu like a cross between Harrell and like Bam Adebayo. Like, he's like kind of that middle ground.
Sounds like number one overall potential to me.
Which, like, Bam is really good. And if you got Bam at number one in this draft, I think you'd be pretty happy given the fact that he's turned into like a top 30 player. I don't quite think that Okongwu is as explosive and laterally quick as Adebayo. And I don't think that he has the high post initiation abilities. And
yeah, I don't think he has, I don't think you see the same playmaking from him. Like, I think he projects similar on defense, and Bam without the playmaking. I mean, given this draft and given the fact that I think for most Cavs fans, you just don't want another bust, and you really need to start focusing on defense at some point here. And that's really the appeal for me, because I feel like he fits well. He helps you on defense, but he's not – I mean, no one in this draft is really going to take the Cavs out of the lottery next year, but it's not going to hurt their chances of getting a real difference maker in 21.
I mean, you know what the funny thing is? Like, he might be, like, the next Tristan Thompson. Like – super high level role player. Did I just say that right? Super high level role player that, you know, is really awesome on the glass, is a good rim protector, can defend in space, and you don't have to hide him offensively. Maybe he's like Tristan with better hands, is like a good way to put it. Where like you can trust him to at least catch, even if not make like incredible decisions with the ball. So, you know, maybe that is something useful for Cleveland if they fall to, you know, six on draft night. But at number two, like, which I think is what you said originally, like, you would take him at number two.
I think we said we'd take him at number
one. Oh, yeah. No, I'm taking him at one.
Yeah,
like, I can't. We just don't want to hurt, Sam.
Yeah.
like I philosophically I can't abide by taking someone like Tristan Thompson, as much as Tristan is fantastic and a great role player. Mm-hmm. I can't really abide by taking someone like that at one whenever like LaMelo Ball exists. Or, you know, even if you don't want to take the risk on Anthony Edwards, I would rather just be like, all right, I'm going to take Anthony Edwards and figure out the Garland and Sexton situation afterward, or like simultaneously with taking Anthony Edwards. Same with LaMelo Ball. Like, I'd rather just deal with the problems that you already have and take the higher upside guy than deal with the problems that you've created by taking two point guards back to back.
I do think if you can get a sucker to trade up, if you win the lottery, like Okongwu is a guy who you might be able to get. Like, some mocks you'll see him at 6 or 7 on occasion. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder if that's really the business they should be in, if they really find themselves falling in love with the guy. I guess my thing with him is he's just such an easy mover. It feels like you know, some big guys just look a little stiff, like they have a hard time turning the corner. And I don't think that's the case with him. I feel like he definitely isn't super polished, but when he's got the handle or when he has the chance to attack in transition, even with the ball, like, he doesn't look completely lost. He doesn't look like Tristan Thompson out there. So I do wonder if there's some nascent ball handling and some playmaking, but I do agree that it does feel like Bam would be quite the stretch.
Yeah, I think it's like a Montrezl Harrell situation where he can put he can catch a short roll, put the ball on the deck once, maybe twice, going toward the basket, and then like gather and finish. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I trust him to like short roll, dribble once, bring a defender to him, hit a short corner pass, hit a skip pass to the left corner. Like, I don't know that he can do that stuff.
I don't think any of the guards in the Cavs can do that stuff.
I think Chetty might be able to. He's not really a guard, but, you know, like, but that's kind of what you're talking about there, like, in terms of that role for, like, what a functioning roster should look like. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he's going to be able to do that stuff, but I think that I understand what you mean in terms of like being able to go like one dribble, maybe two, up toward the basket in a short roll situation.
So what's the highest you take him? Is it literally two?
I wouldn't take him two. I probably wouldn't take him three. Or are we talking like if I'm the Cavs specific?
Yeah. Let's go Cavs specific here.
I would take Wiseman over him because I think the upside is just a little bit higher. I would take Ballin Edwards over him for sure. I would personally probably take Obi Toppin over him.
Mm-hmm. Really? Really?
Five, I would say. Something like five.
Okay. That's interesting. Now, Toppin over him, we'll get into in a second. I feel like
people are going to yell at me for that take.
I feel like that's very, very, very likely. But I think people just want a safe bet. And Carter, is there something for all those people out there that are looking for a safe bet?
Yeah, it's me sharing the ad copy on the Twitch stream. But the other safe bet, other than me fucking up, is with Bet Online. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack. They're bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. Bet Online has live, daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can bet on and have your family worry about you. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Justin, I know I say it every time we read this copy, but here's the reality. The Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest is not happening.
I don't think it is.
There's a 0% chance.
It seems risky.
If we make an exception in this society for the hot dog contest, what are we doing?
I love that so much.
People are going to raid the arenas. If hot dogs are going on and we don't have other sports,
this is going to cost us the Bet Online sponsor read for the Blue Wire Network. But damn it, we're not having a Nathan's hot dog. Those bets will be returned, guys. Don't bet on that. It's all open 24 hours a day, and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online wagering solution. This isn't the only time we're going to be talking about hot dogs, Justin. Tell us all about our next sponsor.
Thank you, Carter. Yes, it's true. Just like you want a draft prospect that's going to last a long time, your girl wants you to last a long time. That's why you need to go to getbluechew.com. Sorry, that's bluechew.com. Bluechew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance to the bedroom to another level. They got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them any time of day or at night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in a pharmacy line. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost, and once you're approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. So here's a great deal for you guys. Visit bluechew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BLUECHEW.com, promo code BLUEWIRE. It's that simple, Carter. It's that simple. That's how you can start lasting longer. I know you were talking to me about
you
it earlier.
You had no today. Plan for that toss.
I had none.
That's what you
Listen, when all else fails, throw
you
under the bus.
You ran out of steam hard, bro. All right. So, as we were saying before the podcast, Carter, this is what you could probably use.
Yeah, Carter, I know we're talking before the pod about you not lasting long, so there you go.
So, saddle up and get some Blue Chew. Sam, without looking it up, we asked the people, do you think it's a chalky supplement or like a gummy?
Oh, God, I have no idea. Could not even begin to fathom.
It's a chalky. It looks kind of like a Tums. It looks to me like a Tums.
Yeah.
I actually was trying to pull up the ad, a video ad for it as like a bit during the read. Couldn't find one.
Ah, dang. So, that's too bad.
So they're a radio-only guy right now. There appears to be some... this seems problematic.
I don't want to know what you're looking at right now.
I'm just looking at YouTube right now, and the results are like, seem tough. Taylor tries Blue Chew. I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to see this.
Is that like a makeup tutorial, but with erection pills? That's great.
I think so. And then the second, we're going to get canceled. I'm going back to the, we're taking YouTube away.
Yeah, well, for once, Carter, you're not being canceled by being associated with me, so that's a nice change.
Sam, yeah, I'm canceling myself.
I want to get your thoughts on the guys that are currently on the roster, because obviously the Cavs kind of have three guards in Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, and Kevin Porter Jr. that they've shown flashes. I want to know if there's anybody between the guards that are on the team and the veterans that are there. Is there anyone currently on the roster that would impact your decision making when it comes to this draft?
No. I actually like Colin more than what I think the general consensus does, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder to find guys who can actually gain separation, can actually play with speed, and can actually shoot and score at a high level and like a somewhat efficient level.
Yeah.
In the NBA, like I think it's just harder to find those guys than what and can like do all of those things at once than what people think. And the fact that he's doing it already at 20 years old says a lot to me about the fact that it, like, worst case scenario, this guy is a sixth man. Like a good sixth man, right?
Right.
And I actually think, like, there are real high-end outcomes for Colin Sexton, just given that he's, like, a maniacal worker that seems like he really just wants to continue getting better and better and, like, genuinely wants to be an all-star. Now, I am not a huge fan of the pairing of him and Darius Garland because I think they're both terrible defensively. Like, they are... so bad.
I wonder if they also think that, because I certainly do.
And like, it's hard enough to defend with two guys that are like 6'1" on the court, but when you combine the fact that they're both 6'1" and they're both bad defensively, it's a significant issue that at some point is going to need to be rectified. I think that the Cavs took Darius last year just trying to upside hunt, which is a commendable strategy on some level. It's not one that I personally abide by during the draft. Like, I think that player development and situational fit matters in regard to development and in regard to the way that players grow and get game experience and continue to figure out who they are on the court. But I understand why they would go about taking a second point guard, because finding that guy who can take 80 pick and rolls a game and create offense at a reasonable level is probably the most important piece of having a good team right now in today's NBA. Right. And if you had any questions about Colin doing that, then it's worth taking a flyer if you had Darius way high up on your board comparatively to everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we asked this to
and but let me just talk about Kevin real quick. Kevin is wing, and you can just make that work anywhere. Like, I really like Kevin. I had Kevin as like a lottery value last year in this draft, or in last year's draft. So I'm really high on Kevin, but when I tend to not talk about Kevin within these conversations, Cavs fans tend not to be happy with me. Mm-hmm. But reality is, like, I am really high on Kevin. I just think that you can make him work with anyone that you pick.
Yeah, you could play him at either wing position, basically, right?
Right, and be fine.
Yeah. We've asked this a couple of times. We've talked about this internally. We've talked about this a billion times, but I still think it remains just as interesting of a topic, which is there any player on the roster right now that should affect the way you draft in the abstract and then affect the way you draft in this draft, which we know pretty mid?
Yeah, like when you're looking – let's say you want to draft LaMelo Ball. Does the presence of those guards impact your confidence that the Cavs are going to be able to develop him? Because that's the thing that I'm really factoring in when it comes to this draft is you're looking at who's currently on the roster. And even if you are going best player available, at some point you actually have to develop these guys. And I kind of wonder if the presence of all these guards would impact one, how happy LaMelo would be on the team, your ability to develop the guards that are already there, your ability to develop Ball. Does that factor in at all for you?
For me, yeah, it absolutely does. That's kind of what I was talking about before with like situational fit playing an incredible role in player development. Having said that, if you feel such little confidence in your coaches and your just organizational structure that you feel like you can't develop people, mm-hmm. that is a systemic issue that needs to be rectified from the top down. That's like every team should feel confident that they should be able to develop players. Now, in the case of taking someone like LaMelo, I don't hate the idea of putting him next to someone like Colin Sexton, because LaMelo, what he does really well is creates his own shot or create shots for others. I'm sorry. In pick and roll, out in transition, and off of a live dribble. I don't really love him as like an end of shot clock creator right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to need, whoever drafts LaMelo is going to need to put someone next to him early in his career that can be that end of shot clock creator. I actually think Colin can do that at like a pretty reasonable clip. LaMelo defensively, I think that there are going to be concerns. His fundamentals defensively are terrible. His instincts are pretty good. Like, he actually shoots passing lanes when he's supposed to shoot passing lanes and is pretty smart about, you know, just knowing where to be rotationally, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
His problem is just like concentration and effort. Like, if you would watch the number of times this year that like he was supposed to be the backside tagger on a roller to the basket and just got caught like literally wiping his shoes, like it was 5 or 6 times this year. I swear to God, it was crazy. And that stuff I think is fixable though, as he continues to mature and be a bit more reliable as a basketball player and goes from being 18 to being 22 years mm-hmm. old. Go ahead.
So I'm kind of curious, because so if they do take LaMelo, I do think that the fit makes a lot of sense between him and Sexton on the floor. what does that mean for a guy like Garland? And if the Cavs do take another young guard, who do you move to the bench, and what does that mean for that player moving forward? Like, is there a degree of writing off happening if you take a guy like Garland and move him to the bench for his sophomore year? Like, how does that play out in your mind?
Yeah. I mean, if I was running the show personally, mm-hmm. I would, like, simultaneously to selecting LaMelo Ball, let's say, I would be moving Darius Garland personally. Okay.
Man.
That's
crazy.
Do I think that they would do that? Like, do I think the Cavs themselves would actually go down that road of doing that? I don't, personally. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you could even get value for him right now? I mean, he had a rough rookie year, but I think everyone kind of acknowledges why.
Sure.
But, like, I mean, it does feel like you're going to be taking a haircut value-wise with the fifth overall pick being moved.
You are, but that's why you don't take Darius Garland at five in the first place. Because right. you're always going to have to take a haircut on whichever of these guys ended up emerging. Because that, like, they can tell you publicly, they can tell us all publicly that, you know, we thought that they could play together. We still think they can play together. There are enough smart people in that front office and in, like, the basketball ops department there for me to believe that they don't actually think that long term. Maybe they thought mm-hmm. it early.
Well, it seemed like at some point, everything
publicly is that they think that these guys can play together, but, like, I don't see that.
Well, it's funny because you look at this season and there were times where, like, Chris Fedor would come out basically and said that the team's kind of anticipating a pivot to it being Darius Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. As the backcourt. And then Sexton really started emerging. And I agree with you. I think it's meaningful, especially after the Jordan Clarkson trade. You're basically looking at him scoring 23 points a game, doing it above league average efficiency at 20 years old. Like, that's important to me.
Collins really good.
Yeah, and he should have the ability to be a good defender. Like, that's the big thing, is he was the worst defender on the team this season, and that shouldn't be the case. Like, he has the wingspan, and if he really dedicates himself to that end of the floor, I think he's a decent enough passer for a combo guard, but the defense is really going to be what determines his ceiling. How many guards in this draft? So I assume you have Sexton higher as a prospect than Garland. How many guards in this draft would you take over Garland?
Not a crazy amount. This is a guard heavy class.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would rather take a chance on the upside of Darius Garland than take, like, Tyrese Halliburton or Killian Hayes.
Okay.
Now, you do lose the extra year of player control if, like, you trade Darius Garland for, let's say, like, 11 overall or something like that, right? Like, let's say...
Not the draft you trade into, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But this draft is not great. And if you are Cleveland, is it worth trading Darius Garland? Like, this is just me spitballing. Like, I've not, like, talked to anyone about... This is just total speculation. But, like, if you're Cleveland, are you willing to trade Darius Garland for 10, knowing that, like, you can maybe get Devin Vassell or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's the other guy we'd probably take at one because we're so afraid of a bust. So,
that's actually my guy. If Okongwu's off the board, Vassell is the guy that I would really like. Like, I think he makes a lot of sense. And what I really want coming out of this draft is somebody that projects to be a good defensive player, because at some point the Cavs are going to have to do that. And I'm still high on Garland. I think he showed he is a better passer than a lot of people thought coming in this year. And he kind of reminds me of rookie year Kemba Walker, where it's like, okay, he needs to add some strength. I don't think he necessarily has Kemba ceiling, even though I love to make those jokes and comparisons. But it's I think once
thinks so.
Yeah.
just once, so we're clear, he kind of thinks it.
Yeah, no, Garland's Kemba Walker, KPJ's Jimmy Butler, and Sexton's Bledsoe. How about that? I do think that I still have confidence in him, and I don't feel like any of the guard prospects in this draft are a clear tier above him. But you have mentioned Edwards. And
I do just want to note real quick, like, it's not that I think Darius is a bad prospect. Like, I actually still think he's pretty good. So when I say that, like, yeah, he'd be the one I would move if I took LaMelo Ball, it's more based off of the fact that I think that the fit is a little bit better with Cullen. If we're going to talk about taking Anthony Edwards, like you're about to mention,
yeah,
I would actually think otherwise.
Right. So, I was about to say, like, I feel like Edwards and Sexton, that's really tough to make work.
Right. So it's not that I'm, like, out on Darius Garland. It's that I'm out on the process that the Cavs have undertaken now. Because realistically, the other thing about this class that you needed to know going in is, A, you're not going to be very good this year. Like, just straight up. We knew the Cavs were not going to be very good in 2019-20. B, this has always been assumed to be a high-level lead guard draft. Like, we knew that LaMelo Ball exists. We knew that Anthony Edwards exists. We knew that Cole Anthony and Tyrese Halliburton were going to be in this draft. We thought at the time that Nico Mannion was going to be really good. We knew that Théo Maledon was going to be in this draft. So, like, even though guys like Kyra Lewis and Killian Hayes have gone from, you know, mid to late first round picks to guys that could go in the top 10, I do think that the Cavs' thought process in terms of playing out the draft last year was still flawed, and it now puts them in a very problematic situation in regard to roster building. Not that I'm out on Darius Garland.
Yeah, see, I did not know that this draft was a guard-heavy draft, so I like taking Garland because, to me, he was my either third or fourth guy. And I was like, well, you know, you're taking best player available. And it seemed like the Cavs were aware that Sexton probably shouldn't be your primary initiator, but he can be that kind of combo guard scorer. It's so funny because I don't think that the Cavs are anywhere near the point where they shouldn't be going best player available. And I want to give a shout out to Gus, who emailed Chase Down Pod months ago asking if the Cavs should be in best player mode or start plugging holes. And we finally are getting to that draft question, but it's when it comes to Edwards, what type of upside do you see with him? Like, if you were to take him, do you start to look for ways to move Sexton, or what would your thought process be there? Like, what type of upside do you realistically see him having?
Yeah, Anthony is a tough one for me because he got to basketball late. He was a football player when he was younger. And if you believe that guys tend to get better at a, you know, their growth trajectory, guys that get to basketball later, their growth trajectory just gets shifted, like, further up the aging curve as they continue to, like, learn and increase their feel for the game, then Anthony Edwards' ceiling is ridiculous. If you think that that guy is going to keep getting – higher and higher in terms of shot selection, in terms of his intelligence handling the basketball, in terms of his, I guess the way to put it is body control to maneuver around the basket so that he can finish at an exceedingly high level on drives. If you think he's going to continue to grow as a passer and playmaker to where he can play like a Victor Oladipo-y hybrid lead guard role, then that ceiling is extraordinarily high because there is not a better power to explosiveness intersection of a player athletically in this draft than Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. If you believe that guys tend to develop their feel for the game from a younger age and these guys that get to the game later struggle to keep developing it, then it becomes a little bit trickier of an evaluation. And I think that Anthony Edwards is probably more likely to be like a solid starting scoring guard in that scenario. And it's probably not worth taking at number one overall. So I think a lot of it is going to depend on learning more about what makes him tick, learning more about what makes him does he just want to live in the film room learning every single thing that he needs to learn about basketball in order to be great, or does he not want to be about that? I think that the question is still open on Anthony Edwards in that regard.
What do you think of him as a playmaker? I know that his stats there are not great. He's had, he's had a couple flashes, it seems, here and there where it's like, oh, that's an interesting angle he picked to make that pass. But
yeah,
feels like that's definitely, he's more of a pound the rock guy right now. What do you think of the state of his game in that capacity?
I don't really think of him as a great live dribble passer. Like, you watch LaMelo Ball and it's like, okay, this guy can be handling the ball, driving at full speed, and then with one hand can lift and throw a lob to a diving big man. Or he can with one hand throw a cross court skip pass or a behind the back pocket pass, right? Anthony Edwards doesn't have that live dribble ability. Like, forget even finding the angles that LaMelo does, because that's ultimately what makes LaMelo as special as he is. I don't think he even has the ability right now, in terms of just his control over the ball as a ball handler, to be able to make these high-level passes before passing angles close. So that's the biggest thing. Passing and ball handling and playmaking tend to go one hand in with another, or in with the same hand, basically. So I think that that's the first thing that Anthony Edwards needs to work on. He needs to really tighten up his handle. And instead of becoming a guy who can go right to left, crossover, step back to get separation, he needs to be able to use that explosiveness, start to get better bend and use that burst to drive toward the basket, keep a tight handle, and then be able to make plays based off of where the help comes from.
This is a really interesting comparison, because this is something I think Colin Sexton's had to get a lot better at. Sexton had all the explosiveness in the world in terms of straight line speed, but couldn't get past the hips of his defender in his rookie year. And his handle was honestly pretty weak. Guys could pick him, and he would often kind of run into a brick wall, and he wasn't using the ball to kind of manipulate his opponent at all.
Or his body.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that ultimately, that's kind of the biggest thing that Sexton got a lot better at, and that's why he became an effective scorer this season. And it's kind of interesting that the comparison kind of holds here. And I mean, you could say the same thing about Oladipo, right? Like, he didn't really become a dominant on-ball player until he could dribble.
Right, 100%. The two things really go hand in hand, because being able to make passes off of a live dribble just opens up so many different angles for you as a passer. So that's the big thing that I look at with Anthony Edwards. Like, I think he's just really got to make strides as a live dribble creator, as a live dribble driver and passer. He needs to be able to not just try and get to his step back and be a perimeter player.
Is it fair to say, now that we've really dove into this draft, that the best thing the Cavs should do is try to attach this pick to Kevin Love and see what type of value is out there?
Oh, 100. If they could attach, if they get number 4 in this draft and are able to attach that pick to Kevin Love and get off the Love deal, that's a win.
Yeah,
it's a huge win for the Cavs.
It seems like, especially, I think they should only do it if they do get something of value back, like a young player that makes sense for them. That seems like the move, especially if Love does want out of town. And I think Drummond's going to have some value, especially if the cap kind of shrinks and he's this massive expiring at the deadline going into a great free agency class. Maybe the Cavs can kind of restock the cupboard and then try to land a real difference maker in 2021. I do want to get to one more question. Mike from our Discord had asked, Sam, why do you believe that Jalen Smith isn't being ranked higher than a mid-20s guy? What do you kind of see there from him?
Yeah, so two things. I think he's a center, not a 4. And he's a center with a higher center of gravity, which allows him to be pushed around. When you talk to coaches around the Big Ten, they felt like all of their big men that played Maryland this year could really just kind of move Jalen around once he was inside. So I worry a little bit about the way his rebounding is going to translate. And then his overall lateral movement on the perimeter is just not very good. He's just very stiff. Now, the question I've been kind of posing to teams that I talk to is, do we think this is a Miles Turner situation where when Miles Turner was in the draft, he was very, very stiff. And when I talked to Joe Abunasar over at Impact in Las Vegas, what he told me was that Turner, his glute muscles were basically very weak, and it led to him having to play very upright. As soon as he strengthened the glute muscles, he was able to get better bend and was able to be quicker. Is it a similar thing with Jalen Smith playing his upright because he doesn't have that kind of strength in his muscles to get bend? Or are his hips just naturally very stiff and he's always going to be this upright? Teams are really going to have to do their homework on that. If they think that they can fix that problem, I totally get taking Jalen Smith at like 20. If they think that they can't fix that problem, there's some real downside.
So that's probably something they can figure out over Zoom, right?
Yeah, seems great, I think. Yeah, you know. Anytime you're dealing with body mechanics, the best way to do it is for him to just, like, pull down his pants and show his ass on Zoom.
Hey, don't give me too many ideas here. We've already talked about having too much body movement. So
that's what we're going to do a month in when we're really out of pod ideas.
Love it.
This is going to turn into my OnlyFans. That seems to be the pivot we got to make here. Sam, I really, really do appreciate you coming on. This has been a lot of fun. Really informative.
Well, hold on. Can we talk about Obi Toppin?
We absolutely should be doing
it. Crazy, man. Would take Cavs fans are going to yell at me
for Obi Toppin.
Okay. Yeah, I need explanations why you want Jack Kuzma that high.
So he's definitely better than Kuzma, I think, because he's more explosive athletically and just like way stronger than Kyle is. Kyle is like a string bean at like 195 pounds, and Toppin is probably like 230 and has actual explosiveness throughout his like hips and throughout his like quads and legs. One of the absolute best rollers in this draft class. Like, I think that the best comparison for him is someone like a John Collins with like more ball skill right now. He's that kind of leaper. He's that kind of rebounder. He's that kind of shooter from distance. Shot 39% from three this year. He has very clean mechanics, very quick mechanics that should allow him to get a lot of shots off. And you look at the variety of actions that Dayton utilized him in. They would run him in dribble handoffs and allow him to reject the handoff, turn over his right shoulder and drive, right? Or they would allow him to utilize the handoff, roll to the basket, utilize the handoff, pop out to three, catch, pump fake, drive. Or they would throw the ball out to him on the wing. He would, strong dribble once, go between his legs, go behind his back once, and pull up from three. There's just a lot of stuff there in terms of skill set offensively that I think you can't teach. I totally get the concerns on defense. Like,
yeah.
I really am a little bit worried about what he's going to be able to do on that end. He has this strange combination of being wildly explosive vertically while having kind of stiff hips in regard to how he's able to drop his hips and try and cut off an angle whenever he's moving laterally on a ball handler. He basically just always turns and tries to recover, in a straight line and contest from behind. So that is a significant concern. I do think he can provide some value as a weak side rim protector at the four, but I think he's just so good offensively and so skilled offensively that I don't want to say it's going to override the defense at all, but I think that I would rather take that guy and try to teach him how to be solid rotationally defensively than take the guy with lower offensive upside, or considerably lower offensive upside, in my opinion.
His offense is ridiculously fun. Like, that's part of it. Like, he's going to be fun to watch no matter where he goes. I do have those end of game concerns that we talked about earlier, but it's...
I do too, honestly. Yeah, I think that's completely reasonable.
The thing is, I'm not going to be completely heartbroken, even though my main want in this draft is someone that plays defense. I'm not going to be heartbroken because I just don't feel like there's that massive of an opportunity cost with really any of these top guys, because I just don't think that upside's there. So it's not going to be one of those franchise kind of defining misses, like if you don't draft Luka. It's going to be unfortunate, but maybe, you know, he's going to be someone that you just don't play at the end of games, or he's a very, very effective bench score.
What do we think about his age? He's very old.
Doesn't bother me as much as it bothers other people, I would say. You look at his trajectory in terms of like how he got to where he is in regard to the age, right? So he was absolutely in every regard a late bloomer athletically, right? Had zero Division I offers coming out of high school, did a prep year, really blossomed athletically there, ended up having to redshirt for a year at Dayton after he got that offer. And basically from the time he's been at Dayton, he's not really a one-year wonder. Like, you look at the second half of last season, he was a monster. He was averaging like 16 points and 8 rebounds a game. And, you know, he declared for the draft last year. And I've talked to a few teams that like tried to convince him to stay in the draft. If you're willing to take a two-way, we're really interested in you. Obviously, he didn't do that, which was really smart on his part, because he's going to go somewhere in the top 10 this year. And the level of growth and the level of that he has gotten better over the course of the last 5 years, it shows me that he's still on an upward trajectory. Just because, you know, someone like, I'm trying to think of a name here, who like hasn't really gotten better. So like there's a kid at Duke named Wendell Moore, who is 18 years old, maybe just turned 19. I think he might still be 18 years old. He was 6'5" with like a 6'11" wingspan, 225 pounds from the time that he was basically, you know, 15, 16 onward, right? And just physically was stronger than everyone at the high school level and dominated that way. And I really liked Wendell Moore coming into the year. I was wrong, because when he got to college and, you know, the athleticism caught up to what he was bringing to the table, he couldn't really do anything anymore. So with Toppin, the fact that he has continued to get more explosive athletically and then continued to add skills, I'm not someone that like tends to get like wildly caught up in, oh, this guy's 22. We have to consider the fact that he is closer to his ceiling than most. I don't know that we've seen any reason to believe that Obi Toppin has reached his ceiling, given that he's gotten better every year for the last 5 years of his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there's precedent for that. I mean, you got guys like Pascal Siakam that were older prospects, and granted, he started playing later in his life, but still, it doesn't mean that a guy is topped out. So that's interesting to me. I do want to address one last question on our Twitch feed. Just want a few words on Okoro. Where do you stand on him?
I'm intrigued. He's a great defender for a kid that played most of this year at 18 years old. I think he turned 19 in maybe late January. Really great defender, good on the ball, great help defender, does everything that you look for on that end. I think he does have some real potential with ball in hand. He is not like a tight ball handler, but he does have real burst, and once he picks up the ball, he does have the ability to maneuver around guys at the rim and finish with craft at the basket. Plus, he's obviously just a ridiculously explosive leaper if he's coming off cuts and loading off 2 feet and everything. So I get that part of his offense. I personally have Devin Vassell ranked one spot ahead of him on my board because – I have very real concerns about the jumper. Mm-hmm. The mechanics on the jumper are suspect. He has like a bit of a shoulder hunch at the top that results in a hitch. And then he doesn't get great consistent lower body involvement in the shot. So I really think that, like, I don't think you're talking about like a page one rewrite, to use like a Hollywood term, in regard to like the screenplay that is his jump shot, right? But it's going to take real significant work for him to become anything resembling a shooter, I think.
That's fair. I mean, I also have Vassell higher than him. The fact that he's got that high release and projects to be a very good defender and shooter, like, to me, that's a very easy fit on basically any team in the NBA. It's going to be interesting, though. I mean, none of these guys are locks to really be starters or stars. So it's going to really come down to how teams develop them and whether or not they create those good environments. But Sam, we really, really do appreciate your time. This has been a lot of fun. As I mentioned at the top of the podcast, everybody, you can still get a free subscription at The Athletic. So go check that out. If there's any prospects that we did not touch on, you can read Sam's work there. Follow him at Sam_Vecini on Twitter. Do you have anything else you want to plug?
No, I'm just writing a lot at The Athletic right now. Go to the Game Theory podcast over on iTunes. That'll be good. But yeah, no, guys, thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to those watching live on Twitch. We really do appreciate that. We'll try to get out a bit of a broadcast schedule next time that we're going on Twitch so that everyone listening that does want to watch live can and interact. We really do appreciate it. If you want to support the podcast directly, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. And if you want to be part of our exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. Big thanks to Sam. Thanks to all our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.
All right, we're clear.
Awesome.
Awesome, guys. Fun.